You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
We are in the second week of a series, and coming into 2012, our church is about a year and a half old, for those of you that are new, and we began to sense that one of the things we needed to pay attention to as a church was our understanding of the church. What it means to be the people of God, what it means to gather here like this. And so we spent the first part of the year preaching through the book of 1 Timothy, which is a letter from Apostle Paul to Timothy, who is a pastor of a church. And we asked two questions. What is the church and how does it work? And as we were working through that series, we began to see, you know, we also need to address the question about what it is we do here on Sundays, because this isn't the whole of the church. This is the gathering of the church. And so we want to ask two questions in this little short series, which is, what is the worship of the church? What are we doing here? And how does it form us? Why are we here? What are we doing? And how does it forming us as the people of God? And last week, Todd introduced the idea of covenant relationship. It's very much like a marriage relationship in the sense that I am bound in a covenant with my wife, Debbie. That is positionally what we are. We are married. We check that box on the paperwork, all right? Now, the quality of that relationship fluctuates based on how big of an idiot I am on the given week, but we work through it, right? So that's, in a sense, what we are with God. We're in this bound relationship with God. It's of His initiative, but the quality of that relationship fluctuates based on how we interact with God. And in gathered worship, what we're doing is we're renewing that covenant. You can think of like when spouses renew their marriage vows. That we're doing that every week. We're renewing this covenant that we have with God. And so today we come to a very important part of that renewal process, which is confession. Confession of sin and absolution, which is the forgiveness we have from God. I don't know if you guys have seen postsecret.com. I happened to be watching a TED video and saw the founder of it explain it. I'll give you the brief here. It's a guy in Washington, D.C. went out with a stack of postcards, and he self-addressed them on one side, and on the other side, he wrote some instructions about how people could mail him a secret from their own life. And so he began to get these postcards in, and people were writing. Some things were just little silly things. Some things were really deep secrets inside people's lives. And he started getting them not just from Washington, D.C., but from Texas and California and all over the world. And then people began to send their own postcards, and they became these very artistic expressions of confession of people's secrets. And so he started putting them on a website, postsecret.com. And of all of the websites in the world that don't have ads, this one is the most popular, most visited website in the entire world. I got kind of sucked into it, you know, like I'm going through the website, I'm watching some of the videos that they have. And I began to wonder, why are millions of people literally drawn to this? It's so simple. One of the things that I experienced, and I think that millions of people experience, is that there's something about it that gives me a glimpse into just to the soul of humanity. Just to see the things that people would confess, that people are going through, and just gave me a sense of our humanity. It can also give you a sense of your own humanity. As I would read things that I identified with, they were a little more moving to me because they were a little more personal, right? We all have secrets. That's really the premise of the whole project. He just thought we all have secrets. He knew because he had secrets. They're like wounds in our soul that we try to cover and bandage up. We all have, along with that, guilt that we carry, that weighs on us. And I think that's part of the draw of postsecret.com. I think that everyone is looking for a way to cover up that wound, to unload some of the weight of their burden. And so this provides an outlet, an artistic expression even, of how to do that. But as great as PostSecret is, and there are lots of really good things about it, it ultimately falls short. Because it fails to address the nature of our woundedness, the nature of the guilt that we feel. Those things are relational. And so the shortfall of PostSecret is that all of the confession is anonymous. And so it helps you sort of get things off your chest, but confession is not simply about getting things off my chest. A confession is about the joy of restored fellowship. And for the Christian, and as we talk about worship, confession is about restoring the joy of fellowship with God. And that's what Psalm 32 that Bev just read, that's what it teaches us. And if you have your Bible, go ahead and open up there. We're going to walk through this psalm together. And it's written in three little sections. In verses 1 and 2, David makes this claim. His claim at the bottom simply is, we need forgiveness. That's what we need, not just simply to get it off our chest. We need forgiveness. And then in verses 3 through 5, he proves his point, so to speak, by telling his own story about not confessing sin and about eventually confessing sin. And in the last half of that psalm, verses 6 through 11, he transitions to giving instruction based on his experience. And so we're just going to walk through this together. We're going to look at this claim he makes. We're going to look at his story and how we can learn about our own story through that. And then we're going to heed the instruction that he gives us in there. All right, so let's begin with this claim that David makes that we need forgiveness. It's interesting when you think about a worship service. I have a friend who's been to a worship service a few times, and one time I had a conversation with him. He said, you know, I've been to your church now a few times, and I like it, you know, but there's something that's just not right. I was like, okay, well, what is it? He goes, I don't really know. It's it just has this real negative feel sometimes. What is that thing you call it? And I was like, sin? He goes, yeah, that's it, sin. You talk about that a lot, and it feels really negative, and he doesn't like that. He would prefer to keep things positive. He would even say, look, I don't know much about what you're doing, but it seems to me that worship should be like a celebration. And you know what? There's a lot of truth to what he's saying. Gathered worship is a celebration of the risen Christ. And we do, not just us, but I think contemporary Christianity has a tendency to focus on sin. We've got it in our heads that God is only really moved if we feel terrible. Right? Well, that's true. Sometimes that is the way that God works, but sometimes he gives us an increased joy. He stirs our affection for him. He increases our love for him and for his people. But in America, we do tend to go toward that way. So my friend is right in that. I posed this question to him. I said, hey, what if what you perceive as negative, I actually experience is like really joyful? The same exact thing. And he was like, okay, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, when you hear us talk about sin, it feels condemning and judgmental to you because it's kind of the end of the road for you. That's all you see. That's all you hear. When I hear us talking about sin, I do feel that sense of grief and weight because there is that associated with my sin. I have done wrong by God and done wrong by people, and there's some grief in that. But it doesn't stop there for me. When I hear us talk about sin, I also hear us talk about the forgiveness that is from God associated with that sin. It's like a checkpoint that I can't get to the forgiveness until I get to dealing with my own sin. And in that sense, it's really the most positive experience I have all week is to think about God's forgiveness in light of that negative, dark sin. That's David's point. Look what he says. Blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord counts no iniquity, and in whom spirit there is no deceit. This word blessed in both the Hebrew and the Greek is a really important concept. It's like our concept of happiness, but much more profound. It has to do with a deep sense of fulfillment and security that comes from God. And so King David is writing this. He's saying, you know, want to know what blessedness is? Deep fulfillment and security, it's being forgiven. Here's a guy who had all of the things that we think bring fulfillment and security. He had money, he had fame, he had power, he had all of it. Yet his experience teaches him this truth. You want to know what blessedness is? It's having your sins forgiven. That's blessedness. Let's talk about this word sin for a second, because the reason that forgiveness is so blessed is that sin is so bad and so out of our control, something that we can't deal with on our own. And David gets to this point by the language that he uses. He uses three words for sin in these two little verses: transgression, sin, and iniquity. Transgression has the sense of like, God has shown me a way to go, and I have rebelled against that, and I have chosen to just go my own way. Sin is a common word that basically means falling short, missing the mark. Iniquity talks about something that's crooked or distorted. Now look, these aren't three like levels of sin. You know, it's just a way of describing the singular reality that God created us for a certain kind of life and that we went our own way. That he created us for a certain kind of life and the own way that we went on our own, we totally missed the mark of what he intended for us. And that on our own path, we began to create alternate gods for our own fulfillment and our own security. That is, we got so crooked and so distorted in the way that we see the world that we began to think that money and power and pleasure and the approval of others and on and on and on, things like that, would give us a sense of blessedness. That's how bad off sin has made us. There are too many stories to count about the number of people who have made it to the top, who have gotten everything that it is you think you want for blessedness, and it didn't fulfill. I mean, you've heard the stories. That's how messed up we are. We know the stories, yet we think it's going to be different for us. When I get that job, the house, that wife, that person's approval, this relationship, when I get those things, I will be happy. So in light of hearing all the stories, in light of what Scripture says, we still think it'll be different for us. That's how pervasive sin is, and that's what David's trying to get at. Why do we do that? And in light of knowing all that, why are we still on that chase? When David uses the word covered, blessed is the one whose sin is covered, he's very intentionally, I think, trying to point us to Genesis 3. You remember what happens there? Adam and Eve sin. In fact, God tells them what to do. They transgress. They go their own way. And on their own, they immediately find out that they have missed the mark of the life that God intended for them. And everything about how they see the world is distorted and perverted. And what do they do immediately? They cover themselves. They see the shame of their nakedness, and they cover themselves. They sew fig leaves together, cover, and they hide from God. This is us. This is the reason that even though we know the Scripture and we know the stories, we will continue to chase all kinds of things as if those will bring blessedness, because we're trying to cover up our sin. Cover it with money, cover it with pleasure, cover it with people's approval. Everybody's trying to cover up. And in the case of Genesis 3, you read it and it's kind of pathetic. Like, what are they thinking? They can't cover their shame. You can't hide from God. So all I want you to see is that David is saying that forgiveness is blessed, but you won't understand that unless you see the pervasiveness and the wickedness of sin. And it's in all of us. All of us have the guilt and the shame, and all of us are trying to cover up. And so one of the things he's going to call us to is confession. You know, when God comes to Adam and Eve in the garden, he calls out to Adam and he says, "Where are you?" It's a call to worship. The reason God calls out to them is because he doesn't want them to spend their whole lives covering up and hiding in shame. He has for them a life of restoration and joy. They have to come. So he calls to them, and for them to worship, for them to be clean, they're going to have to come. They're going to have to respond. They're going to have to confess what they've done. Confession is just an honest accounting of things with God. And David says, when we do that, we are forgiven. That's what he's saying. Blessed are those who come clean, for forgiveness is theirs. It's interesting. He uses three words for sin. And likewise, he uses three words for forgiveness. He says, blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven. And it has the idea of God carrying away our guilt, removing it, forgetting it. Blessed is the one whose sin is covered. It has the idea of God covering our shame, just like he did for Adam and Eve. Isaiah says, I have been clothed with the garments of salvation. I have been covered in the robe of righteousness. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against him. In other words, he credits the perfect record of Jesus to our account, and he credits our sin to his account. Paul says that he who knew no sin became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God. Do you hear the good news? As pervasive and as wicked as sin is, as so much more is God's forgiveness glorious. Does it cover all of it? This is the basis of why we confess during worship. When we get to that point in our liturgy, after call to worship, after we sing, we get to that confession of sin. The point of that is so that we would all be reminded that we are all broken and that we all need so much mercy and grace. I think we know that. I think functionally it's really hard for us to believe that. Because when we come here, this is a pretty successful, good-looking group of people. Like, we look around the room, we're like, man, these people all have it kind of put together, you know? Like, life's going pretty well for them. I've heard you say those things to me. And the truth about confession is, and the reason we do it is because it reminds us that, no, that's not actually the case. We're all messed up. We're all trying to cover something. All of us. And so confession reminds us of that. Worship brings us great joy because when we confess, we experience God's provision of forgiveness. But let me tell you this. It's possible to gather in worship. It's possible to go through all of the steps of our liturgy and not experience that joy. Why is that? Notice what he says. Blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered, against whom the Lord does not count as iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. The quickest way I can explain that is to say that to have deceit in your spirit would be the equivalent of like knowing that you have sin, admitting it, but not feeling it, right? So I know I have sin, but I don't feel a sense of revulsion, a sense of hatred toward that sin. I don't understand the weightiness of it. It would be to just go through the motions of church like everything is fine, but to not deal with whatever God is trying to speak to you about. That is to have deceit in your spirit. And if you do that, you'll completely miss the blessedness that is yours in worship. Let me ask you to do this. No, let me not. Let's move on. All right. Let's move on to David's story. Here David begins to support his claim from his own experience. He says in verse 3, "When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of summer." David is saying, there was a time when I kept silent, when I didn't deal with it, when I just went through the motions and I didn't confess my sin. And in general, I'm convinced that this is basically how we live our lives. About 11 years ago, I started asking these little questions to people about confession. I've asked you this before. You know, if I asked you how many things do you think you've done this week that merit confession, either to God or to others, think of that number, and it's usually this really high number. And then I'll say, okay, well, how many times have you actually, you know, articulated confession to God or to others? And the number is like minuscule in comparison. And I'm convinced after asking that, after having those conversations over and over, that we're just not very attentive to our need for confession. That's one of the reasons we practice it weekly together. Beyond that, beyond just not being aware, I think also some of us have stuff that we're just not willing to deal with. Meaning you're aware of it, you just don't want to talk about it. Not with God, and especially not with people. You don't want to talk about it with God because you're pretty sure that he's going to make you talk about it with people. And so you try to bury it. David, I think, knows what that feels like as well as any of us. Some commentators will say that this psalm is in conjunction with Psalm 51, or it's related to it. And Psalm 51 is where he explicitly confesses his affair with Bathsheba. It's a total mess of a situation. He basically lusts after this woman. He takes her. He lies with her. She's married. Her husband is at war. So David, being the commander-in-chief, gives command for her husband to move to the front of the line so that he'll die. So we got adultery and murder and deceit, like all wrapped up into one little thing there. All right. It's hard to tell for sure. It seems to me, but as I read the chronology of it, that there's some time that passes before David confesses, before he commits those acts and before he deals with the sin. And even then, he only deals with it because Nathan confronts him. Nathan calls him out. Not our Nathan. There's a different one in the Bible. All right. And what he's saying is when I kept silent, when I tried to bury it, when I didn't deal with it, it dealt with me. Look at the consequences here of silence. There's physical consequences. He loses strength and peace. My bones wasted away. I think it is possible to get sick because you're holding guilt. I'm not saying all sickness has to do with guilt. Don't hear me there. But I'm just saying there are physical ramifications of carrying around guilt, not dealing with sin. It's not just physical. It's emotional and psychological for him too. He loses his joy in this. One writer that I read had talked about the indelible quality of grace, meaning that it's something that's sort of, it's in the fabric, it's ingrained in, it acts upon us when we don't even know it. If you've ever carried around guilt, if you ever try to keep something silent, you know how it just eats away at you? You know, it doesn't matter how much you try to forget it, your conscience just keeps pushing it to the forefront. It doesn't matter how much time passes. It doesn't matter how much you change your environment. It doesn't matter if you move to a different city and get a fresh start. It's still there. It's all there. Guilt, keeping silent about sin, has that kind of effect on us. It's also spiritual. And when you're carrying that around, you don't want to deal with it. You don't want to pray. You don't want to read God's word because you know you won't receive it. You don't want to really commit to community because you know that's all connected somehow, your relationship with God and your relationship with people. You can't like bifurcate that. David says it explicitly in Psalm 66. He said, "If I had cherished iniquity in my heart, you would have not listened to me, God." And so God says that. Yes, this has spiritual effects. You hide this stuff, you try to bury it, don't expect this line of communication to be like wide open until we deal with that. The power of guilt is real, and it manifests itself in all kinds of ways. And I think you should consider how much of your anger, how much of your frustration in relationships, how much of your manipulation and control, how much of your drive to achieve even, is all really a function or a manifestation of the guilt that you carry around. You're just trying to cover, just trying to deal with it on your own. But you can't. Your bones waste away through groaning. God's hand will be heavy upon you. If you're his child, he will not just let you go. Your strength will dry up. The only hope for joy is that God would carry away our transgression, that God would cover our sin, that God would not count our iniquity against us. That's our hope. Would you take a minute, and I want you to just think about this. I want you to think of something in your life that you feel guilty about. I'm confident that we all have something. All right, something in your life that you'd rather not talk about or deal with. All right, get that thing in your head. This isn't just for fun. Get it in there. Now, what if everyone in our church community knew that thing? What would you stand to lose? If everybody here knew that thing about you, what do you stand to lose in that deal? Reputation? A job? Relationship? Your own sense of righteousness? Whatever the thing is that you stand to lose in your mind, chances are that's the way that you're trying to cover up. That's the thing that you're pursuing. That's the false God that you're worshiping to try to cover up the thing that you don't want to deal with. But the gospel frees you from that fear. The gospel says that your identity is not in what this group of people think about you, but what God thinks about you, and he's pleased with you because he's pleased with his son, Jesus. The gospel says is that your righteousness is not about your achievement. It's not about what you've accomplished. It's about what God has accomplished on your behalf through the life and the death and the resurrection of his son, Jesus. You don't actually stand to lose anything. You stand to gain everything. Blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. This is the point that David came to. You know, I kept silent, and not dealing with sin was more miserable than what I thought dealing with sin would be like, and so finally, I confessed it. Look at verse 5. I acknowledged my sin to you, and I did not cover my iniquity. I stopped trying to pretend. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. Can you imagine what David had to overcome emotionally to get to that point? I mean, some of you think that if you would finally come clean with that thing, that God would take that occasion to like really lay in on you there. You think that if you finally came clean, God would say something like, look, I gave you chances, it's too late. It turns out, according to David, that no, when I confess my sin, he forgives the iniquity of my sin. Like there's nothing in between, there's no steps. It's really kind of that simple. I'm not saying it's easy, right? There are consequences of sin. It's created havoc in your life. There are circumstances you've got to walk through. There's people you've hurt. You have to deal with all that. But look, you have to deal with something either way. If you keep silent, you're going to deal with the power of guilt and the discipline of God in your life on your own. If you come clean, you're going to deal with whatever the ramifications of that are, but you will have the presence and the power of God walking with you in that. And you will experience a joy that surpasses whatever fear you currently have. That's it. God just forgave him. Look what he says here. Verse 7. When I confessed, here's what I experienced. God, you are like a hiding place for me. You preserve me from trouble. You surround me with shouts of deliverance. You give me instruction in the way that I should go. You counsel me eye to eye. I can look God in the eye now, finally. And here's his instruction to you. Don't be like a mule. You know what a mule's like? I don't think probably a lot of you have a lot of mule experience. If you're trying to train a mule to go in a certain way, mules have a way of just wanting to go their own way. And so if you're trying to get a mule to go down this row, start to veer, right? And how do you get him to come back? Kick that thing as hard as you can, right? And he wakes up and he comes back. And a little while later, he kind of does his own thing. You have to kick it again. And you just have to keep doing that. The mule only corrects because of the discipline. There's nothing inside the mule intrinsically that thinks, I really just want to go in the way that my master wants me to go. A lot of us only come clean when we get caught, or because we think we're going to get caught. A lot of us only come clean because we think we're afraid of the consequences of not doing so. That's not what confession is about. Confession is about a relationship with God, the joy of restored fellowship with him. And there's a difference here. I want you to see that David had a relationship with God. He's God's chosen special one. God knows about his sin. David knows about his sin. But what is broken is the quality of the relationship, the fellowship that they experience. And the only way for that to be healed and for that to be restored is for David to speak the words, to confess his sin, not to think about it, but to speak it genuinely and brokenly before God, not to be a mule. Therefore, he says, let everyone who is godly, let everyone who knows God pray to him at a time where he can be found. Because in the rush of great waters, surely you will not reach him. In other words, when you feel God speaking to you, when someone in your community confronts you with something, don't be like a mule. Turn to God right then, when he can be found. Because if you don't, and you harden yourself, and you callous your heart to his voice, and then the rush of great waters comes into your life, you won't turn to him. You won't find him, because you don't know how. Some of you think that's already happened, but I'm telling you, right now is the time. Turn to God. He can be found right now. And so let's do that. I'm going to give you just like a minute and a half. It's going to feel like 30 minutes. I want you to silently ask God, God, speak to me about whatever you want. I'm going to be an open page. Write your word on my mind right now. What do you want to talk to me about? All right, give you 90 seconds. Go. All right. I know it's kind of crazy, but even in church, we could turn to God and he could speak to us. Now, let me ask you this. Would it freak you out totally to talk with somebody about what God just shared with you or spoke to you about? Not like right now, but at some point. Some of you got really scared just then, like it was going to happen now. If that freaks you out, you still haven't got it. You still don't believe that blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sins are covered. You still want to hold on. You still want to cover in some way. You still don't want people to know. But it is the blessed life. That's how David closes this psalm. That's why he says, be glad in the Lord and rejoice, O righteous. Shout for joy. Does this sound like somebody who's in a negative worship experience? This is the most positive thing I could possibly imagine. I came to God with all of this crud that I thought he would condemn me for, and he forgave the iniquity of my sin. Shout to the Lord with joy, you upright in heart. Worship is meant to set us free. It's meant to loosen the grip of sin in our lives. It's meant to reorient us to the glorious, blessed life of peace with God and with each other. We have to speak it. We can't just go through the motions. The more you experience the steadfast love of God surrounding you, the less you will be concerned with being exposed. As I watched more of the post-secret stuff, they actually have one series that's a video. So they go around cities and they'll video somebody and they'll be like, tell us one secret. So now it's way more engaging. I find myself way more drawn to it because there's a face, there's a person, there's something personal about what's going on, even though I don't know them. And it just confirmed to me that, man, this is more relational in nature than anonymous. And then at one point in this video, what I thought was the best scene of all, there's this guy and this girl, and they're either dating or married, I don't know which. And they're like facing this way with each other. And when it starts, they ask them, share a secret with each other. And the girl says, come on, dig deep, to the guy. And he thinks, he's like, oh, wow. And he goes, okay. Remember that time your cat ran away? I killed it. Crazy, right? Now I'm in. I'm like, yes, this was the best idea ever on planet Earth. And so she just stands there. She takes it in for a second. She doesn't respond. And the guy says, okay. The guy, her boyfriend says, okay, you share a secret with me. She says, okay. She thinks about it. And I'm thinking like, oh, she is going to get him good. Like this, she's going to pull out the dirty right here. And what she said, okay, I got it. You know all those journals I have that I don't ever let you read? He goes, yeah. She goes, they're filled with love poems about you. Just freaking broke my heart right there. The guy's face just completely lit up because he's expecting condemnation and wrath. He killed her cat, right? But in his confession of sin, what opens up to him is not condemnation and wrath, but a world of love that he didn't even know about. That's what worship is. That's why we gather here, to get a glimpse of this world of God's love that we cannot even imagine. Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.